welcome to another episode of Here's What I Think, musings by two Anabaptist pastors, educators, and most importantly, Christ followers. I'm Matt Showalter.
And I'm Jeremy Miller, and it's good to be back together again.
Today, we're going to be talking about a book that I came across not too long ago. It's just a library book I checked out. The title grabbed me, and as I got into it, I thought, man, this is some powerful stuff. The book is The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg, and he puts his finger on, I think, some really good and foundational things. As we live as Christ followers, I mean, it's not written necessarily from a Christian perspective or something like that, but there's some really foundational things in it for people who are Christ followers.
Yeah, you know, Matt, I think one of the things that I look forward to in this episode is connecting that piece of habit, how habit connects with faith. And one of the things I found really interesting in the book initially was the idea that 40% of the decisions we make throughout the day are really predetermined. We don't think about them. And how important it actually is for that to be that percentage to be that high. Because if you think about it, if you had to think through and consciously make every decision, starting with the very first thing. So you get out of bed and it's like, okay, what do I do next? You know, most of us have a routine. We just have a habit. We do it. And it allows our brains the space to give energy to the stuff that we really have to think about.
And there's a real power to that.
Yeah.
Because if you sat, I mean, think about it. If you sat in bed or laid in bed before you got out of bed and had to think meticulously about what the best thing is to do from there for the next, you know, hour of your day, it would almost be debilitating. But habit kicks in, and so you do sort of your morning routine. And for some of us, that may be a really good, healthy morning routine. But for some of us, it may not be a good, healthy routine, but for all of us, the habit is what is sort of the common denominator.
That's right. And the habits that we choose, and we know this as people of faith, the little habits that we choose over to execute over a long period of time really determine the course of our lives and determine the outcomes of so many things that we're living for. And so the key is to develop these little ways of living and being so that they become automatic and our lives can begin to build on those things and you can begin to see incredible fruit if the habits we choose are good.
And then I think that was the epiphany for me with this book, was just understanding how powerful habits are. Because we tend to think about, we tend to think about goals, for example, where we'll set a goal that I'm going to, let's just say I'm going to run a marathon. But actually, what is going to enable you to hit that goal, to actually make that goal,
yeah,
is the habits that you form that get you there.
That's right.
So, you know, running the marathon isn't the habit. Running the marathon is the goal, but it's going to start with a lot of little habits that you do, you know, right from the start.
Right. You know, the book started, I think, in the prologue with this story about this lady who, in her life, was falling apart. She had all kinds of things that weren't going well for her. But something about her had transformed, and these psychologists are all doing research on what in the world happened, because the lady that now stands before them is different than the one whose life was completely falling apart. And that transformation they went through started with a bunch of little changes. In fact, they talk about sort of one significant change that you wouldn't normally correlate with sort of massive life change. But so for instance, in her case, you know, she was talking about one of the key things for her was to have a goal. She found her life was, she'd hit rock bottom, her life was falling apart, and she's like, what am I doing? Well, I'm going to, in her case, walk across the Egyptian desert, or trek across the Egyptian desert. Yeah. So she had this goal, and then she realized, but if I don't change some of my behaviors, I'm never going to be able to do that. And so she started exercising. She hadn't been exercising. And that goal caused her to think, well, I should probably pay attention to the food that I'm eating. So she changed her diet. And the biggest one is she said, I can never do this if I keep smoking. Mm. And so, like, she had to arrange her life so that she could stop smoking. Now, the book goes, we're not going to go into it today. The book goes into, like, how those habits were changed.
Yeah.
But what I just found really interesting was, you know, she wanted to walk across the desert, trek across the desert, and the key was changing all these little habits in her life to get her there.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, so kind of the author goes from there of sort of putting his finger on this, just the power that's in habits, but then he kind of focuses on, okay, it's not good enough to just get rid of the bad habits necessarily. We also then need to learn to instill sort of good habits in our lives, because mm-hmm. like, to go back to the morning routine thing, you know, there's some very good habits that I hope are a part of all of our lives when you get up in the morning. Let's, you know, brushing your teeth, for example, or something like that. Hopefully that's a good habit that you've developed. But then you also may have some bad habits that you've developed. Maybe like, I don't know, I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but maybe like hitting the snooze button. Is that a bad habit? Do you hit the snooze button like 10 times? Is that a bad habit that you need to do away with? So how do you not just get rid of bad, but then instill good? And one of the case studies that is in his book has to do with Saddleback Church out in Rick Warren's church in California. And he talks about early on in Rick Warren's ministry, his desire to see people kind of develop good habits. And so part of the church covenant that he made in terms of, that members needed to sign in order to be a part of Saddleback Church was they needed to sign a covenant saying that they would spend some devotional time with Jesus every day.
Matt, that sounds really legalistic.
It's so legalistic, you know. but it's, you know, it's Rick Warren.
I mean, yeah, yeah. What were the other two?
The other two, well, tithing. Tithing, okay. 10%. So it's like personal finance. Like,
even worse.
Woo! He's really putting his finger on it. And then what was the third one? The third one was...
Was it small groups?
Yeah, you had to be a part of a small group.
Yeah.
And I just thought, wow, he put his finger on three things that he saw as good habits for a Christian to develop. And wrote that into his church covenant, which just kind of blew my mind.
So, Matt, I feel like this is an idea worth like pushing out just a little bit. So many followers of Jesus view any sort of spiritual discipline or habit as like almost living in terror that somehow this is going to turn them into some religious
Pharisee
that's just full of legalism. And that if any true Christian who's really spiritual, like, you don't even use the word habit or discipline. Like, that's somehow archaic. That's full of the negative stereotypes of religion. How do you respond to that?
Well, part of it is just it's semantics, because a term like legalism carries some really negative baggage, rightfully so. I mean, Jesus really comes down on sort of the legalism of the Pharisees and hypocrisy that's built in there. But at the same time, I wonder, isn't there such a thing, though, as good legalism, depending on what you're being legalistic about?
Well, I mean, yes, because every successful person outside of faith, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. People that have experienced extreme success in any area of life, outside of winning the lottery, mm-hmm. right? gets there out of discipline.
Yeah.
And so you work hard, you do the little things right over and over and over and over and over again.
And you're legalistic about it.
And then you begin to experience fruit in that part of your life. But for some reason, so many Christians say to themselves, now wait a minute, okay, that principle applies everywhere else, but in my faith life, if I determine every morning to get up at 7 and pray, I am in danger of being a legalist. And, like, that doesn't compute.
Yeah.
I don't feel like God created the world to work like that.
Is it fair to say that maybe legalism in... So when it comes to something like love, for example, or relationship, or there's... I think there's an appropriate and a good legalism that must be a part of that. I mean, here's what I'm saying. Like, for example, in my relationship with my wife, with Colleen, I am legalistic about being faithful to her.
You're kidding.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it crazy? And she appreciates that legalism. And she is legalistic about being faithful to me, and I'm so glad for that.
Has that turned you into a religious Pharisee?
No. And it's necessary. I mean, that legalism
be faithfulness.
Is that legalism is necessary when it comes to something like that. But sure, I get the so Jesus, when he talks about legalism and the hypocrisy of the Pharisees, you know, he talks about it in the context of prayer, for example.
Sure.
He says, Pharisees love to pray standing on the street corner so they can be seen by people as they say their long prayers and so on and so forth. And so I think when it comes to religious, to our expressions of religion, maybe it's the purpose behind it if we're doing it simply for show.
Say, yeah, if the purpose is... to sort of like enhance ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
If we're religious so that we, you know, we have the moral high ground somehow, mm-hmm. or we gain status as religious leaders, you and I both carry some religious leading responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And if somehow our piety is done to enhance that, then I think we're really in danger of becoming Pharisaical. If, however, our discipline and our habit are done to love God and love others, like we're habitual about stuff because we want to love Jesus, and we're habitual about stuff because we want to love other people, then it feels like the purpose of all that is totally different.
Yeah.
And it's not self-glorifying. It's not sort of for the purposes of self-advancement. It's for the purpose of advancing other people and the glory of God.
Yeah, and that's where legalism turns dead.
When it's aimed at ourselves.
When it's aimed at ourselves.
Yeah,
when it's aimed for sort of self-glorification.
I really do think the church has oftentimes missed this.
Mm-hmm.
And we have shamed any sort of consistent righteousness as legalism, and it's been to our detriment. And, you know, I like we serve 18, 19, 20-year-olds
mm-hmm.
who, because people older than them have been so scared of legalism, they've actually fled righteousness, and they haven't taught young people, like, what are the practices that they ought to do every day to enhance their love for God and their ability to love other people? Because we've been so scared of being legalistic.
So maybe it is semantics. We need to talk instead of with these practices, instead of talking about it as legalistic, we just talk about it as habit.
There you go.
And disciplined habits.
Yeah.
That need to be formed. I was just trying to bring us back to the topic at hand.
Circle back around.
we kind of went on a rabbit trail, but I think it was a good rabbit trail. It was one that was definitely within the sort of umbrella of this book. So you've got Charles Duhigg here with The Power of Habit, putting his finger on the fact that habit is important.
Successful people have successful habits.
Yeah.
We're a culmination of our habits.
Yeah.
It's not just really random.
Mm-hmm.
It's the habits that we live out shape the course of our life.
So as we look at our lives and see different habits that are forming things in us that we don't like, he would say those are the habits that we need to change,
right?
And then replace with good habits.
That's
replace
right.
with things that are going to show the fruit that we want to have.
Yeah.
And then there's, you know, a whole lot in the book that goes into, you know, some practical ways of how to go about doing
it. I was going to say, we've totally not touched on exactly how you change those habits, which is actually really key.
Exactly. But, you know, that's why you need to go out and get this book.
Yeah, buy the book.
And you need to read it. It's not a hard read. There's a lot of sort of anecdotes in it. it, case studies, stories about people. So it's not like a difficult read, but I think it's one that's definitely worth reading.
It's really interesting. Yeah. Lots of good stories.
So, yeah, The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. Go out, read it if you got some time, and see what habits there are in your life that could either use changing or that could use bolstering, or, yeah, see what that does for you.
Sounds good.
All right, well, I think we'll wrap it up there. This has been another episode of Here's What I Think. I'm Matt Showalter.
And I'm Jeremy Miller. We'll see you next time.